all know the phrase, even if we don't know where it came from. Well, it comes from a novel you've never heard of, from 1878, written by a novelist you've also never heard of, named Margaret Wolfe Hungerford. But the phrase is, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Now, basically, for our purposes here, it means that while I may love a film that we talk about, you might not, or vice versa. For this episode, we have a film that critics loved, but I did not. In fact, I think it's fair to say that I hate it. I love the director. The stars are great. It's beautifully filmed. It's wonderfully acted. But I hate it. So much. But there are a lot of people who don't, and it's not fair for me to leave out a film based on a chilling true story just because it's a film that I don't like. So here we are. The Lighthouse is a 2019 film directed and produced by Robert Eggers, who made one of my favorite films a few years before this, The Witch. He also co-wrote the screenplay with his brother, Max. The film stars Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson as 19th century lighthouse keepers, stranded on a remote New England island because of a violent storm. Now, the initial inspiration for the film was not a true story. It was based on an unfinished Edgar Allan Poe story that was called The Lighthouse. Max Eggers began adapting the story, but couldn't figure out what to do with it, so his brother jumped in to help, sourcing the plot from the story of a Welsh lighthouse tragedy, which for most people would sound tame. It's not. And while the story of Thomas Howell, Thomas Griffith, and the Small's Lighthouse isn't a story of an unexplained disappearance, a mysterious death, or a brutal true crime, it's still a horror story that would have been worthy of Edgar Allan Poe. Welcome to American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of America. And welcome to the latest episode of Season 9, a season we call Based on a True Story. American Hauntings is written and performed by Troy Taylor, that's me, and is produced and co-hosted by Cody Beck. And this season, we're bringing you some of the scariest and most unsettling films about ghosts, demons, murder, and mayhem that have ever been shown on the silver screen. But you can't watch any of them and say, it's only a movie. Every episode of this season offers the true story behind these horrifying films, stories that are usually much scarier than anything a movie studio can create. This is episode 19 of season 9, The Lighthouse. The film opens in the 1890s when a young man named Ephraim Winslow arrives on an isolated island off the coast of New England for a four-week stint as a lighthouse keeper. He'll be supervised by an experienced former sailor named Thomas Wake. As Winslow settles into his quarters, he finds a carved mermaid that was left behind by an earlier Wiki, as the lighthouse keepers are called, and he hides it away. Wake immediately turns out to be a very demanding supervisor, ordering Winslow to empty chamber pots, maintain machinery, and carry heavy kerosene tanks up the winding stairs to the light, even though he's locked out of the room where the light actually is. He also quickly learns that Wake has some strange habits. Every night, Wake climbs the lighthouse stairs, takes off all of his clothing, and stands before the light. He also drinks heavily, although, as Winslow points out, it's against regulations. Well, he eventually convinces Winslow to drink along with him, which likely leads to some of the weirdness that occurs next. Well, during his time on the island, Winslow begins to hallucinate sea monsters and masturbates to the mermaid carving he found in his quarters, which seems a little desperate, but he then starts to be harassed by a one-eyed seagull, which Wake warns him against killing because, as the legends say, gulls are reincarnated sailors, and killing them brings bad luck. Well, the time on the island drags on for the two men, and then finally, the day of departure arrives. A ship is on the way to take them away from the lighthouse and leave two other men in their place. But before they can leave, Winslow discovers several dead seagulls in the island's cistern, contaminating the drinking water. As he closes the cistern cover, he's attacked by that one-eyed gull, which Winslow brutally beats to death. And do I mean brutally? Suggesting that Wake's story about killing gulls and bad luck is true, the wind changes direction and a fierce storm hits the island, preventing the ship from collecting them. Winslow and Wake spend the night getting drunk, and when Winslow goes to empty the chamber pots the next morning, he discovers the body of a mermaid who's been washed up on the beach. He assumes she's dead, but then she revives and screeches at him, causing him to flee to the lighthouse. When he gets there, Wake informs him that flooding from the storm has ruined their food supply. Well, Winslow isn't too worried about this, since the ship is going to be picking them up and will only be a day late, but Wake says they've already been stranded for weeks. Now, honestly, I have no idea what is going on at this point, but I will say that when the pair find what seems to be an emergency crate of food, they discover it's filled with bottles of alcohol instead. And it's fair to say this is not a good turn of events. As more storms hit the island, apparently keeping away the rescue ship, Winslow and Wake get drunk every night and have alternate moments of friendship and hostility. One night, Winslow tries unsuccessfully to steal the keys to the light room from Wake and even thinks about killing him for a moment. Now, he probably wished he had after he found the one-eyed head of Wake's last assistant in a lobster trap. Then, while drunk, Winslow confesses to Wake that his real name is Thomas Howard and that he assumed the identity of Ephraim Winslow, a cruel man he'd worked for in a Canadian lumber camp that he'd purposely allowed to drown in a river. When Howard, who used to be Winslow, I'll just call him Howard now, tries to steal a small rowboat and flee the island, Wake appears and destroys the boat with an axe. He then chases Howard back to the lighthouse, but when they get there, Wake tells him that it was Howard who chased him and had hacked up the boat with the axe. He tells him that Howard was driven mad by his confession about the death of the real Winslow. Now, if you're not confused yet, don't worry, because you soon will be. With no alcohol left, Howard and Wake start drinking a mixture of turpentine and honey, and that night, huge waves crash through the wall of the lighthouse cottage. In the morning, Howard finds what Wake has written about him in his logbook, accusing Howard of being a drunk and incompetent employee, and recommends he be fired without pay. Well, the two men argue, and Howard attacks Wake while hallucinating the mermaid, the real Winslow, and Wake as a shape-shifting sea creature. He beats him badly and drags him to the base of the lighthouse to bury him alive. Well, before losing consciousness, Wake describes a punishment that awaits those who look into the light in the tower. So Howard naturally takes the keys to the light room, but then Wake returns and strikes him with the axe. Howard disarms him and then kills Wake before he climbs the stairs to the light. Once he enters the room, the lens of the light opens to Howard, who reaches inside and then screams as he falls down the lighthouse steps. The film ends, thank the gods, with Howard barely alive, lying nude on the rocks. One of his eyes is gone and a flock of seagulls are pecking at his exposed organs. Now, I know this film means something but I confess that I've never liked it enough to find out exactly what it is. I do know that Robert and Max Eggers studied literature with maritime and surrealist themes when they began working on the script. They also delved into the writings of Herman Melville, Robert Louis Stevenson, and H.P. Lovecraft, among others, before discovering the books of Sarah Orne Jewett, a coastal Maine author who based the experiences of her characters on real-life farmers, fishermen, and sea captains that she interviewed. But more than anything else, they used the story of a tragedy that occurred on the Smalls, a cluster of rocks off the coast of Wales. It was there where a lighthouse stood in 1801 and where two men found themselves adrift from civilization with only each other for company. The Smalls Lighthouse was built in 1776 on a collection of rocks called the Smalls that were about 20 miles off the coast of Wales. In those days, lighthouses weren't the tall cylindrical structures that we think of today, and the Smalls Lighthouse was even worse than most of those built at the time. It was essentially a rickety shack on top of massive wooden poles that raised it up high enough to be seen by approaching ships. The ceiling of the shack had a trapdoor that opened up to the lamp, giving the lighthouse keepers easy access to it without having to go out into bad weather. There was also a wooden deck that surrounded the shack with railings on it, which allowed the keepers to take care of any exterior repair work that was needed. This made the shack on stilts a very self-contained place and allowed the keepers to stay inside during storms and cold weather. In 1801, two lighthouse keepers named Thomas Howell and Thomas Griffith were assigned a shift at the Smalls Lighthouse. The only thing the two men had in common were their names, and when they first started working together, they took an immediate dislike to each other. They argued and bickered, and often their disagreements turned physical, and the violence often sent men and women alike fleeing from the pubs where their brawls usually occurred. Whoever the supervisor had been who sent this pair to the Smalls Lighthouse together should have been fired. Once they arrived at the Smalls, the two men found themselves trapped together in the lighthouse shack whenever the weather turned bad, which was most of the time. Their arguing and fighting continued as it had on the mainland. The two men couldn't agree on anything, clashing over the most mundane and ridiculous subjects. Which is why, when Thomas Griffith died in the lighthouse one night, Howell knew that he would be immediately suspected of killing him. Now, he hadn't. Griffith died in an accident or from an illness, the records aren't clear, but he knew he'd be accused of murder because everyone knew how much the pair hated each other. He'd gone too far, people would say, and he killed the other man. Well, the only solution he could think of was to keep Griffith's body in the lighthouse shack with him until he was eventually relieved. Due to the storms that frequently struck the Smalls, the end of his assignment was unpredictable, and he had to wait for a relief ship since he couldn't just leave. If he kept the body, it would be clear from examining it that there had been no foul play. But if he buried the corpse or disposed of it in the sea, there'd be no way to prove his innocence. So with no other choice, Griffith's body became his new roommate, but that couldn't last for long. Sharing a cramped shack with a person you hate is one thing, but sharing it with a decomposing corpse, well, that's another. Hal needed a different solution, and after considering his options, he came up with a plan. Hal had previously worked as a cooper, which meant he knew how to build large wooden barrels, and he knew how to manipulate wood into specific shapes. So he began collecting as much loose wood as he could to build a makeshift coffin for Griffith. When it was finished, he lifted the corpse inside with a lot of difficulty, Griffith was not a small man, and then dragged the wooden box outside onto the platform that surrounded the shack. He then tied it to the railing so that heavy winds wouldn't wash it into the sea. Satisfied with his plan to prevent accusations of murder, he hoisted a distress signal flag, knowing it would be only a matter of time before a rescue ship arrived. And in the meantime, Hal returned to work. He kept the lighthouse functioning as best he could, doing the work of two men. He climbed up and down through the trapdoor to the light, keeping it maintained and burning at night so that ships would know to avoid the rocks and prevent disasters from occurring. It was a solid plan, and it worked well, until it didn't. As storm after storm battered the lighthouse on the Smalls, Griffith's coffin was battered too. The hastily built box was no match for the weather, and within days the wood splintered and pieces were torn away and swept out to sea. At first, Hal must have been worried that Griffith's corpse would also be washed away, and the only proof of his innocence would be lost. But his fear must have turned to relief when he saw that the body didn't go anywhere. The coffin had been torn away, but the ropes tied around the railing had somehow twisted around the corpse, holding it tightly against the platform. Horrifically, the decaying corpse was held in place directly in front of the shack's only window. It was positioned in a way that, every so often, gust of wind would catch one of the arms, making it look as though Griffith was waving through the window at his old enemy. This continued for a while. And by a while, I mean 4 months. 4 very long, very gruesome months, during which the corpse went from fresh to bloated, to decomposed, all the while staring in through the window of the shack at Hal, who was trapped inside the shack as the storms raged. It had to be maddening, because it was impossible not to look at it. The body could be seen from every part of the shack, and even if you closed your eyes, you might not be looking at the corpse, but the corpse was certainly looking at you. While it still had eyes, that is. But why 4 months? Wasn't anyone trying to help Hal and Griffin? Yes, they were, but they never really thought help was needed. Attempts were made many times to get to the lighthouse and find out why the distress signal had been raised. The problem was is that every time boats tried to approach the Smalls in the storms, they all saw the same thing. The light was burning just like it was supposed to be, and there were no signs of boat wreckage or accidents. Everything seemed to be in perfect order. There was also one other thing that caused them to think that everything was fine. Each ship reported that when they got close, they saw a man standing on the platform outside the shack, and every once in a while, they saw him offer a friendly wave. Eventually, though, Thomas Howell was saved, but it's likely not a surprise that he was a very different man than the one who had arrived at the Smalls months before. Close friends who saw him after the incident apparently didn't even recognize him. He was thin, almost emaciated. His hair and beard were long, and his eyes were haunted. He looked and acted like another person, one who had suffered the kind of physical and emotional damage that meant that he'd never be the same again. When Robert Eggers released The Lighthouse in 2019, he called it a horror film, something that most critics would never agree about. They claimed it defied all labels because the plot refused to conform to any sort of conventional ghost story, thriller, or really anything else. Eggers described it as being part of the weird tale genre, but I think it could be easily referred to simply as a story of madness. It's not a stretch, thanks to the story that inspired it. While it wouldn't have made much of a movie if one of the characters had been haunted and driven mad by the sight of a dead man outside his window, the idea of it is definitely unsettling. Eggers, though, went in another direction. In interviews, he said the film's subtext was influenced by Sigmund Freud, and he hoped it could be a movie where both Freud and Carl Jung could watch while furiously eating popcorn. He gave the characters a father-son dynamic while placing them in a situation that's a lot like purgatory. When the personality they've created for themselves starts to get stripped away, you see what their real nature is, and this leads to desperation. But again, I'm not going to try and analyze this film for you. I don't like it enough to think about it anymore, but I can tell you that Eggers did mix some mythology into the plot that is interesting. The older man tells the younger about the maritime superstition that it's bad luck to kill a seabird, and then when Howard kills the bird, it brings on the storm and traps the two men on the island. This plot point is taken directly from The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, a spooky work by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, in which a mariner kills an albatross and brings disaster to his ship. The fate of Howard, the younger lighthouse keeper, comes from the myth of Prometheus, the titan who stole fire from the gods and gave it to humans. After he finally reached the light and learned what was in it, he falls down the stairs of the lighthouse and his organs are plucked out by seagulls. On the other hand, Wake, the older keeper, was modeled on Proteus, the prophecy-telling sea god who served Poseidon, who makes an uncannily accurate prediction of how Howard will die at the end of the film. He's also seen with tentacles and sea creatures stuck to his body in one of the younger man's hallucinations. So while the film is horror, mixed with mythology, insanity, homoeroticism, and filmed in artsy black and white, it was inspired by a real-life incident that, while it certainly doesn't include most of the elements of it, we can't ignore that it's still based on a true story. A true story that I think is more skin-crawling and unusual than what the director decided to put on the screen. Thanks again for listening to American Hauntings, and we hope you'll stay tuned for the postmortem section of the episode. It's coming right up after these messages from our sponsors.
When we were young, we used to dream of being anything, an astronaut, the president, a prince or princess. But as you get older, your dreams change, focusing less on running the world and more on how you can take your skills and ideas and turn them into something real. Instead of dreaming of going to space or owning your own castle, maybe you should start dreaming of owning your own business. You'll need a website, a payment system, a logo, and a way to advertise to new customers. It can all be overwhelming and confusing, but thankfully, that's where today's sponsor, Shopify, comes in. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the US, from household names like Mattel and Gymshark to brands just getting started. We even built the American Hauntings clothing store on Shopify. What if I can't design a website? Shopify's got you from the get-go with beautiful, ready-to-go templates to match your brand style. What if I need a hand? Get help with everyday tasks like enhancing product images, writing product descriptions, or generating discount codes with Shopify's AI tools created for commerce. What if people haven't heard about my brand? Shopify helps you find customers with easy-to-run email and social media campaigns. And what if I get stuck? Shopify is always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/hauntings. Go to shopify.com/hauntings. shopify.com/hauntings.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's a timberman want with being a wiki?
Just looking to earn a living, just like any man. Starting new.
On the run. Keeping secrets, are you?
No, sir. Watch us spill your beans. Watch us spill your beans. Rock. 5 weeks? 2 days? Help me to recollect.
Try to get anyway with it. I don't want to be running the speed test.
Ready for a little more American Hauntings this week? Well, we are back with the postmortem, the part of the show after the show where we sharpen our knives and dissect the episode. My name's Troy Taylor, and I'm the guy who narrates and writes the show. And across from me is the guy that I think I could share a lighthouse job with, at least for a little while, without trying to kill him. My friend, producer, sidekick, and co-host, Cody Back.
Man, I've definitely, I was thinking about it. Like, you know, a long car ride is hard enough with, like, your favorite people. Imagine this, this situation.
Yeah, no thanks.
It'd be miserable. I mean, I guess there are things you could do to try to curb it, you know, not drink turpentine and honey.
That would help. There are a lot of things there that would help. That would have been better than, you know, maybe bring a few more books to read or something, you know, I mean, just anything. I get it. It's not like you could dial up the internet back then or something and stream movies all day, but dude, bring some books, you know, do something besides sit and stare at each other and drink all night. I don't know, man. I don't know. I hate this movie. I know I made that clear in the entire time I was working on it. I hate this movie, but I never have liked it. And I tried to watch it again thinking it'll be better this time. Love Robert Evers. It'll be better this time. Nope. It was not better. So
I didn't like it the first time I saw it. I've only seen this movie twice. Once the initial watch.
Same and here.
This time. Yeah. And I knew it was coming. Not that I knew it was going on. I knew it was coming. Yeah. I liked it a little bit better, but no, man, it's tough to.
Well, I even tried. I thought, you know what? Maybe I'm doing something wrong. So I tried to watch the British version. It's just called The Lighthouse, and it came out like 2 years before this, and it's a little more straightforward version of this story.
Okay.
And I thought, okay, I'm going to try that instead. It was just boring, you know, which maybe that's the whole problem with the story anyway, is that it's so boring that, you know, Eggers tried to make it not boring, and it's just bad. I don't know. I mean, I must be somewhere in the minority on this thing because, I mean, critics mostly seem to like it. I thought I was under that impression, and I can't stand it. I just can't. So I think I was biased against the film in the first place. So I don't know. I'm probably being unfair to it, but
90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I know. I don't understand. I'm missing something, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm willing to say that it's my fault this time. I mean, this is not Mandy or Skinamarink where I know I'm right. This is a case of maybe I'm just wrong because based on other things that he's done, maybe I'm just wrong.
Yeah.
So,
and you know,
and I can live with that.
Yeah. We're fine with that.
Because I'll never watch it again anyway. So what do I care?
Yeah. You know? And I think that's a good lesson though, for people just to remember sometimes you can not like something. It can be okay. But sometimes it is you, and that's okay.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter.
Yes. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. As I said, during the story part of this, is some people are going to love this movie and some people are going to hate it. And I'm going to fall in the second category. It's just the way it is.
Yes, absolutely. Anyway, we'll get to that. But before that, we got some fun stuff coming up. You want to watch
through it? I do. Yeah, I do have a few things, and I don't want to spend an hour working on it. But there are a couple of things that I want to talk about that are coming up September 30th. I will be at the Warrenton, Missouri Library speaking that night. On October 1st, I will be in my old stomping grounds in Decatur. I'll be at the Lincoln Theater. The tickets for that, all of these are free because they're library related. But the Decatur one, you've got to get tickets ahead of time from the library. I don't know how many they're giving out, but I do know 350 have already gone out.
Oh,
so probably like it'll be like one of those things, like 12 people will show up and everybody just got tickets and they're not coming. But and then on October 9th, I'll be at the Granite City Library. I'll be at more. There's more things coming up, but those are the ones that are coming up the soonest. Also, probably a lot of people saw, if they follow us on the socials, they maybe have seen now that we are moving the American Oddities Museum. We are moving away from the Mineral Springs. After mid-December, we'll be moving out into a new location downtown in Alton on Piazzaw. So that's going to be it's going to be a big move, but we're having a private event on December 14th that you can get tickets for. That event has only got like 10 tickets left. So if you have been thinking, ooh, I'd like to do the last day at the Mineral Springs, where we'll be everybody with tickets be getting a commemorative book bag. I'll be doing a presentation on haunted hotels, including the Mineral Springs. So if you want to join us for that, this is really kind of your last chance because the tickets are almost gone. But we will be moving to what's known as the Snyder Building downtown. Used to be a department store for a lot of years. It is haunted. We'll be doing all of our dinners there. The museum will be there. We'll have ghost hunts there. All of our tours will be starting from there. It is a very cool new location, and we'll have a building all our own. So that's going to be kind of a change. So it's going to be cool. But we also have a VIP event there on February the 6th, too, because that is Dead of Winter weekend. And I don't think we talked about this last episode, did we? Dead of Winter? Yeah. So our Dead of Winter, our annual food drive, I know you guys have heard us talk about it for years. Cody and I always do a live show from Dead of Winter, and we'll be doing that. And it will be at Franklin Lodge this year, which is the old Masonic Lodge in Upper Alton. We do a lot of ghost hunts and things there. It's a really actively haunted location and still an active Masonic Lodge, but they really like us there, and they're good people. And they really wanted to be part of the food drive and things. So we're going to be doing our Dead of Winter event there, which is free with the food donation. And then we'll also be doing, as I said, the night before, we're doing a VIP event at the new museum. I'll be doing a Devil Came to St. Louis dinner as an after hour event. We'll have a Black Mirror workshop that evening and a ghost hunt at Franklin Lodge too. So that is coming up on February the 7th, 2026. And I know it seems like it's early, but this is about the time we roll it out every year, and some of that stuff really gets filled up fast. And speaking of fast, that's pretty much where everything is with all of my events. Our Decatur tours, we've got like three or four tours that still have a few seats on them. They're almost gone. We do have Springfield Alton tours too. My seance on October 4th. At the museum, we do have a few seats left for that. Same with the Houdini seance on Halloween night. I think I've got spots on like two pub crawls. That's it. And then some dinners in November and December. Pretty much everything else is sold out, which, you know, standard kind of
right.
It happens. Soon we get to October, everything's already full, but not everything. We still have tours. We still have ghost hunts left. So like I said before, if you can't find something spooky to do with us this fall, you aren't trying very hard, because we do have a lot of things that we offer. And you can find pretty much all that stuff at AmericanHauntings.net.
Beautiful. So I love it.
There you go.
Yes, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our latest subscribers on Patreon. So thank you very much for supporting the show. To Shannon, Lydia, Ashby, Debbie, Holly, Amanda, Shirlene, Monica, Jasmine, Susan, and Jill. I hope you're enjoying the The gross stories that we have just over some
of
there.
The past seasons, the five seasons of our alternative podcast. We do have five seasons that you can binge, including the last season, which Cody is referring to when it comes to the really gruesome stuff, which is our monster mm-hmm. episode about Albert Fish. But we will be kicking off the new one next week. So a week from now, the first episode of our Starved Rock Murders podcast, which is called Canyon, that will be starting off next week. So if you've been thinking about signing up, now's the time. And next Tuesday, the first episode of that will be ready to roll. So that's a show that we offer every other week in between episodes of this podcast. So if you, like the regular run of the show, you'll have something that you can listen to every single week. We're also going to have more episodes coming of the new American Dread podcast from our friend Adam White. That'll be coming soon too. And who knows, we may have more surprises coming down the line. So anyway, if you want to check out our Patreon show, you can be a supporter at patreon.com/AmericanHauntings.
Yes. And if you're one of our Spooky Shirt subscribers, check your email. It's time for the September shirt. That email went out. So hit me up. Let me know what you want and I'll get it in the mail. I'm going to move on to a listener review. So this one is from Ghoul Approved and it's titled Authoritative because it has an exclamation point. So,
Okay.
Yes.
And so you have to shout it.
I have to shout it.
Exclamation. Yes.
The review says, this podcast is a total gem for anyone fascinated by the paranormal. The hosts bring a genuine curiosity and ring of authority that makes every story feel both credible and chilling. The research is authentic. The delivery is confident. And the storytelling is so captivating that I found myself binge listening late into the night. What sets the show apart is the host's ability to balance eerie tales with thoughtful commentary. You can tell they aren't just reading off a script. They know their stuff and it shows. This podcast pulls you in and doesn't let go. Highly recommended for anyone who wants their spine tingled and their mind intrigued. Well, thank you. That's a nice review.
Well, I will say I am reading off script, though.
Yeah, I was going to say.
When I did like, the first part. But I am at least I do write the script. So at least that's something. So,
yeah. And I thought it was funny because I'm like, I'm sitting here reading their review and like stumbling through it, too. So even when I have a script, it probably sounds authentic because
we appreciate the fact that it feels authoritative, even if it isn't. So,
yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, so thank you for the review. And send Troy your info.
Get on to the haunt line and text me your address and we can we'll drop you something cool in the mail since we read your review. Yes. I don't know what your real name is. We only know your, so you'll have to let us know what your name is if you want us to send you something. So that is 217-791-7859. That is the haunt line. And we'll be reading some recent messages we've gotten on that later on in the show.
Absolutely. Are you ready to dive in?
I am. Okay. Yes.
I'll climb
the stairs, whatever we're doing here to this nightmare of an episode.
Yes. Anytime someone says beauty's in the eye of the beholder, I always just think of like you're the one uncle that has like that shirt that says beauty's in the eye of the beer holder,
I can't shake
that novelty t-shirt.
Now, see, I always think of that Twilight Zone episode. And I think it's called Eye of the Beholder. It's the one where the girl is getting plastic surgery and you only see her through most of the episode. She's got bandages all on her face and they keep telling her, oh, we don't know if it's worked. We don't know if we've been able to fix your face. And then they undo all the bandages at the end. And then you see that like this beautiful woman and they're all like, oh my God. And they're all freaked out. But then you see the doctors and nurses and they all have like pig faces.
Oh yes.
I always like that. That's a great episode, but that's what it always makes me think of.
I forgot about that.
So this whole movie is just a giant pig face, in other words, to me.
Yes. And when you mentioned, story being based off an unfinished Edgar Allan Poe story, I thought a lot of it makes sense-ish as far as like I can see some of it being Poe.
No, it still doesn't.
In the beginning, you can't see it being a Poe story?
No. Okay. No. All right. No, I think it's a Poe story that somebody accidentally dropped and picked up the wrong manuscript when they picked it up and went, oh, look, it's H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
And then tried to write some something from that. And even that isn't, even that fails in my opinion. But
that
whatever.
Was going to be the
Again,
other thing I said.
I know we've already been through all this. Again, this is on me. I or on us. We don't like this movie, period.
Yes.
But what do we know? Because it's 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. So
I know. There are a couple of things I did want to mention about this just from my days at Cinema Blend. If you're interested in filmography, cinematography, those sorts of things, there was an article that I'm sure everybody pushed it out there. But all I remember from it, and I found it briefly just a couple minutes ago, but it was about the lenses that they use. So sum it up, says occasionally to capture flashback sequences or scenes of heightened conflict, specialized lenses refurbished by Panavision were used. And I remember this was like a big damn deal because they were really old and expensive,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Panavision from the 50s is when they started using it. Things like Ben-Hur and some of that big Lawrence of Arabia kind of stuff. It was like early, well, you probably know this, but it was early, like what we think of now as the giant screen stuff that, you know, was a big deal at the time. But the problem with that is, this is beautifully shot and it is beautiful.
Yes, that we can agree on.
Why he chose to, and the black and white even works. I've got no issue with that either. I think we've talked about this before. One of the coolest things I've ever seen in recent times is the black and white version of The Mist. Because monsters, it really works in black and white, where some of it's a little corny in color, you know, where in black and white, it's terrifying. But what I don't understand is why he went with that chopped off, you know, why it's not widescreen. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Why it's that small. I've never understood that other than to maybe the idea is it's claustrophobic feeling, maybe, which I mean, I guess stuck on this island would be as well. That's the only thing I can think of as to why he would have done that. But yeah, but I see what you're saying about the lenses though, because it is a beautifully shot film.
Yeah. So if you're interested in all those tech stuff and you're not aware of that, yeah, check it out because it's definitely interesting. And I wish I could tell you more about it. But the last thing I want to say is the script describes the lighthouse as, quote, an erect penis. And that's how you're
there's a lot of that in this movie. Yeah. So yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there is a lot of that.
And it really is. You said, you know, or somebody, I don't know if it was you or you're quoting somebody, but yeah, story of madness. That's clear.
Yeah. Definitely clear.
And do you have a book yet called Sailors and Superstitions? Because if not, you need to write that.
No, but based on your recommendation, I do have that. It's coming out next year.
Book
that I was doing about ghost ships and things. This will not be in it. But there will be, you know, plenty of stuff like that. I mean, the story I like so much better is the guys who disappeared from the lighthouse.
Yeah.
That happened later on. And and I kept thinking, oh, maybe that's the true story. That'll save this episode. It's not. But it's still kind of the real story is interesting.
Yes.
Weird, but interesting.
Yes. The smallest
not as weird as the one with the guys that disappeared from like Ian Moore or something. That one was a lot more interesting because they just vanished one day and they were just gone. No one ever knew what happened to them.
Yeah.
That's what I wish would happen to this movie, but it's still around. Here it is, still on my Amazon account.
Right. So. And the smallest lighthouse, the built in 1776. And, we got the two Tommies.
Do you not want to talk any more about this movie?
Did I
have everything that there is to say? Because I don't understand most of what's going on later on in the film.
We can.
And I just keep thinking, am I dumb? Am I? Okay. Well, if you don't know, then I don't know.
I mean,
I just really got confused by some of this stuff because I mean, I get it. Okay. No, I don't. I don't understand the mermaid. I don't understand the mermaid. Well, I guess the mermaid that he imagines has something to do with the mermaid carving, which I personally did not find that hot, but
not
whatever.
That hot.
I like mermaids, but not, you know, I have a mermaid tattooed on me, but not for the same reason, but I don't know what's in the light. I don't know why the food containers have booze in them. I don't know why anyone would drink turpin. I don't understand. I don't understand what happened at the end. I don't understand any of it.
Yes.
So if you can't tell me that you understand it, then I let's just move on.
I mean,
because like, I don't.
No, so. I don't understand a lot of it. I love mermaids as well. Medusa, mermaids, another one that I'd let kill me. I think I've mentioned that. And as far as just the madness, I just kind of attribute it to like, oh, you know what? I've been in some deep dark holes before with alcohol, and yeah. You lose your mind. Yeah. And I kind of maybe just chalk it up to
maybe
that.
That's all it is. Because I mean, like I said, I know it means something, but
yeah,
I don't know. I've never really dug that far into it to really find out what it is.
Yes,
I don't know. I don't. I guess I don't know. I don't need to know. Let's just leave it at that. Let's move on to the other story.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
I'm just making sure didn't have some pearl of wisdom to impart on me that would explain everything about this.
Troy, it's just thing. Eggers is so he's so deep. You're missing the performance.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I get the witch. I mean, I get everything else this he's
true.
Done.
It's
I just
true.
Don't get this one. Don't get it.
And it was hyped up for a long time. I remember that.
I know. And I know it was.
It's a bizarre movie.
Yeah. Okay. It's just not. You know what? It's just not for me.
It's
Let's just
not
leave
for
it
you.
At that. It's not for me.
Yes. So. That's true.
Okay.
Anyway, so maybe I'm thinking more of this Smalls Lighthouse thing as being an Edgar Allan Poe thing as far as the corpse
yeah,
always
now,
looking at
I
you.
That I could see, yes. Now, see, that I would agree with you. And that's, you know, I don't know what that unfinished story is by
yeah.
Poe, but I bet it has something to do with that.
It
you
has
know, with
to,
this,
right?
Because this, that makes a lot more sense. Now, I'm not sure who put these two guys together.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a terrible idea because
yeah.
they hated each other before they got to the lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like they just met there. No, they already knew each other and everyone knew they hated each other. And somebody thought, oh, I got an idea. Let's send these guys out here to this, you know, isolated, secluded
yes.
lighthouse where they can't come home for a
yes.
month or whatever. And then no one can get there because it just keeps being storms. And I kept thinking, come on, man. I mean, how many storms could there possibly be? Although when you find out why nobody picked them up, it's actually in a really sick way, pretty funny.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
He kept waving at us.
Keeps waving at us. Everything seems fine. He's so friendly out there waving.
One hand is a friendly thing. Two hands is like,
yeah,
oh,
help
shit.
Me.
Yeah.
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 But he's just got one hand. So.
Yeah. And I mean, this is enough to, like I said, Hal's saved, but he was, you know, never the same again. But this
yeah,
is,
which,
this be
which
enough.
You know, this is a very, you know, it's the telltale heart.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
The beating heart underneath the floorboard here. It's a guy who's looking at him with his eye. Remember,
yes,
that
yes.
was the reason that he murdered that guy in the story, right?
Yes.
So, you know, because I mean, yeah, I mean, all I could think of is that, you know, you've got one window.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got your dead frenemy
yeah.
tied up outside of it and, you know, staring at you for 4 months.
Right.
It's going to drive you bonkers. I mean, I get it. I could really understand it, you know. And again, I think they had the same problem they had in the movie. Dude, bring some books to read or something,
yes.
you know, or better yet, close the damn window. I mean, put something in front of the window, something. You know, I mean, it's bad enough having him inside the house with you. That's not going to work. But outside the window is not much better. So I don't know.
I agree.
It becomes like Weekend at Bernie's by the end.
Okay,
you know what
not
I mean?
As fun, but,
waving at passing boats and stuff. You know,
that is true. We don't. Maybe he stood him up and was, you know, waving his arm. We don't know. We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man.
Anyway, so. But I think we could go on about how we like this better than the movie. But I think
yeah,
I'm good.
Yeah.
You ready to move on?
Well, but it didn't make a better movie. I will tell you.
That's
like
true.
I said, I tried to watch the other movie.
Oh, that's
it still
true.
Wasn't better. Yeah, it wasn't any better. It was still bad. It was just more boring. I don't even think you could make a movie of this. It's like an episode of, you know, Tales from the Crypt or something.
Yeah,
you know
yes.
what I mean? It's the 23 minute episode of something with commercials, you know, it's
yes.
not a film here. So,
yeah. Yeah. So yeah. New theory. you and I just don't jive with the story turned into anything.
No, we don't. And I think that's just all there is to
okay.
it. Didn't work for us. And hopefully, you know, maybe it worked for some of our listeners and somebody's going to send us a text that, you know, berates us for being small-minded movie watchers or something, you know?
And it's fine.
Maybe I should just stick to horror films, something. I think people have told me to stick to lots of things over the years instead of talking on a podcast.
Whatever. But yeah, we blame the ADHD. But anyway, this is normally when I'd go into the Ghostwriter stuff. I don't have any today, but if you do have a question or comment about the world of the macabre, you can email me at AmericanHauntingsPodcast@gmail.com. But I know you have some hotline texts.
So I do. I do have some. Yeah. This one is one I can answer, and then I can also add to it. Let me, before I start, just say if you have you already said if you've got a comment about the show, or you can text me on the hotline. And that number is 217-791-7859. And it might get read on the show. But I did have one that asked, what episode do you talk about the Smurls haunting experience? Last Conjuring movie is supposedly based on. Well, we actually talk about the Smurls. I don't think we did. There hadn't been a movie yet. Except for the Andy Griffith one. Remember, we did talk about that a little bit, because I tracked down on YouTube or somewhere. I tracked down the movie that they had made, and it had the Warrens in it, but they were not the Warrens, or at least the name wasn't the Warrens. And it was Andy Griffith playing Ed Warren, which is, oh, man, talk about a miscast. Yeah. But anyway. So we didn't really talk about it. Not really. I've written a little bit about the Smurls, but not a whole lot. I will tell you, I did see the movie, and it is one of the worst movies I've seen this year.
Yeah.
And even though I've got nothing for Ed and Lorraine Warren as real people, I do like the movies.
Yeah.
Well, I liked 1 and 3. I did not like 2, but I liked 1 and 3. This is awful. It's absolutely terrible.
Damn.
It's 2.5 hours long.
Ugh.
And it needed to be cut by about 45 minutes because they spent so much time on, saying, oh, this is going to be the case that, that ends their careers. Oh, if only it had been, but it wasn't. They spent so much time on like their daughter and her getting married and the wedding and their personal lives and all this stuff with this mirror that has a curse on it that almost killed their baby before it was born, when they have this flashback of Ed and Lorraine. And then the mirror gets purchased by this family, the Smurls, who live in this small town in Pennsylvania, which is not what happened in real life, even remotely what happened in real life. Not even close. Ed and Lorraine were, once again, vaguely involved in this story toward the end. And they were only involved because it was making the news, and they, like to see themselves on TV, and showed up to help the family. It is so far away from anything resembling real life. And the sad thing about it is the stuff with the family, except for the dumb mirror thing, the stuff with the family themselves was actually really good. Mm. That part of the movie I liked. It's just as soon as Ed and Lorraine showed up, I'm like, oh God, here we go again.
Oh boy.
More wedding plans. I mean, it was, it was painful. It really was. It was just wow. And then they had this, they had the wedding. And I don't even care if I'm spoiling this. I really don't. I it's awful. It's a terrible movie. They had the wedding at the end, and in the wedding, they had like people from the past movies. In the audience for no reason that they would have come to this wedding. Right. Well, except for James Wan, who's there, who's not, but it was obviously showed him like 5 times. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it why he'd be there. It's funny, you know, but they had like Lily Taylor and all these people from the earlier movies. And I'm thinking, OK, none of these people would have been at this wedding. They don't even know these people. And it was like the end of Lost or something with the church scene of, oh, look, here's all the characters from the show. It was so lame. It was the movie is so bad. it's just, it's really painful. And I know this has nothing to do with your text from the 217. I'm so sorry, but we really didn't talk about the Smurls except in, I don't know, one of our, I'm not even sure which one. I think it was just in conversation.
I can't remember.
That you and I were having when I was telling you, hey, there's an Andy Griffith, Ed Warren movie out there. And I think that's the only time we ever really talked about
it.
So
I can't remember.
We didn't do an episode and we're not going to do an episode. Trust me, we are not. So anyway, back to the haunt line. This is another 217 one, but this is from Erin. She's from the 401, originally from the 217. So she's not in the 217 anymore, but this is funny. She said, I wanted to drop a quick note to tease Troy about his Central Illinois showing. For considering that a city named Athens might be pronounced Athens, and she's right. I knew as soon as I said it that it wasn't Athens, but as a graduate of Athens High School in Central Illinois, that gave me the warm, fuzzy giggle. But in all seriousness, after 20 years in New England, I still get a little homesick sometimes, and listening to you guys helps so much. Aww. Thanks so much for the show. I've been listening since season one, and new episodes are my biweekly highlights of the month. I knew as soon as I said it that I'm like, oh man, dude, I bet that is not the way that that is pronounced.
Right. I love it.
I get it. So this one is also kind of funny. This one comes to us from Cindy in the, let's see where she's at, because she has Texas. She's Texas enough that her name pops up without her, her 847. So she's in a Northern Illinois area, but she says she's not exactly a frequent flyer, but an occasional flyer. LOL. But this is Cindy from Illinois. I got a bit of a giggle about the I doubt people want to read a movie. That was me complaining about, you know, saying, oh, yeah, I want to read a movie.
We
talked about Veronica last time. And she said she got a giggle because she's about the subtitles, because I've now reached the age where I prefer to have the subtitles on all the time. Mm-hmm. Dude, I don't ever watch anything without subtitles.
Same.
And it's also because, as you've given me a lot of hard times about watching Scandinavian crime shows, I have to have the subtitles on. And even all the British shows that I watch on BritBox and Acorn and everywhere, I have to have the titles on, because there's so many dialects. You know, if they're not Northern Ireland, then they're from Leeds, or they're from London, or they're, you know, from Northern Ireland, or they're from Northern England, or from Scotland, or I've got to have the subtitles on. So I can't even do it anymore. But this one is also funny too. This is also about Veronica, and this is from Ellen in the 618. So it's just listening to the latest episode when you refer to the nun snapping Ouija board, it must not have been in the highest quality. She says, ha ha, I went to Catholic school through my third year, and let me tell you, they are strong women. Picturing a nun snapping a board in half is very believable to my little self. Said, I remember our principal and her habit looming over little seven-year-olds, and she was the tallest, most imposing person in my life. She got a good point there.
That's true.
I probably was underselling the possibilities there. I don't know what happened there. So, but she's probably right. And then this is our last one. This one comes to us from the 607. It says, I finally got caught up on the show after a few weeks of chaos, and the Sylvia Likens story is absolutely heartbreaking. I am glad Troy's able to tell these stories so these poor people aren't lost to history. Yeah, that is that's a show that I don't think neither Cody or I are ever going to revisit.
Yeah.
That was a brutal episode. And I was glad to get past it. Not that, you know, Veronica, her story, the Estefania's story, was all that uplifting, but at least it wasn't as horrible as that one was. So, I mean, this one's just a bad movie. But yeah, we'll get on to, I will say our next episode is going to be, it's going to be grim. It's a gruesome episode. The next one that we have coming up is pretty gruesome. There's actually two movies that were inspired by it. One is, in my opinion, is a minor classic. The other one is, it's a thousands kind of movie, you know, one of those movies where, you know, the era of hostile and torture porn kind of thing. But
Great.
It Can't does wait. stick pretty close to the story, though, but it sticks pretty close to the story. I'll at least give it that. And the classic is not necessarily right on the story, but it's a much better movie. So we'll be talking about both films. So maybe a little longer episode next time, but it's definitely a gruesome story, gruesome real life story. So anyway, but at least it won't be poor young girls being tortured. So, cause I can't do any more of those.
Yeah. I'm good on that for a little while.
Yeah. I'm good on that forever, I think. So anyway, well, I'm all set. If you're all set,
I'm good to go, man.
So, all right, guys, thanks for checking out the story in the postmortem for this week's episode. We hope you love the show. And if you do, we hope you'll share it with your friends, family, strangers, or even people you meet on the street. Encourage them to listen. And if you get a chance, so we hope you go to iTunes and leave us a review. And even if you don't listen on iTunes, leave us a review on Spotify or anywhere else you can leave a review when you listen. And don't forget that as an American Hauntings podcast listener, you can use the discount code podcast for 10% off any books, tours, or events you purchase from our online store. Because remember, American Hauntings is more than just this podcast. It's also books, tours, ghost hunts, events, the Haunted America Conference, and the American Oddities Museum in Alton. And you can find out everything about us, well, about these events, on our website at AmericanHauntings.net.
I said, yeah, yes. If you want to find out everything about us, just listen to the back catalog of this podcast, and I'm sure we reveal
probably way too much. Yes.
But this episode of the American Hauntings podcast was written and narrated by Troy Taylor and is produced and edited by me, Cody Beck. To find out more about the show, check out the show notes or go to our website at AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com. If you want to find out more about the podcast, you can reach us via email, by text on the hotline, or on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Thanks again for listening. We couldn't and definitely wouldn't do it without you. So until next time, goodbye.
So long. See you later.
See you later. Okay. All right. Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
This is going to be fun. This will be a hard one.